Let me set the record straight for a minute. Hate, I get it. Say it.
Freak sucks.
I want to know if he's bunking up with Tyrell, and if he's the big spoon or the little spoon. I think he'd be a little spoon just out of principle, because yeah, Tyrell's kind of, you know, he's got the elderly gravitas.
Yeah, and that's true. And using those key stats, they are the key things that we've used to pick out our markets. I don't appreciate the laughing, because I recognize how fumbled that was as I lost my train of thought. But anyways, back to the
No.
Wait, what was that?
I like that you came back to start it off fresh. We're gonna do it live, damn it. 3, 2, 1.
Real legend never die. Still with the finish, you should cry, let it lie. Side for an eye, let's go real suicide.
What's up? What's happening, everybody? Tuesday night here, Divots and Pivots. And I know you're all jazzed up for the Zurich Classic this week. You did it. I saw you. I caught you doing it. You went all sketch on us.
I went down the rabbit hole. I went behind the scenes. I did all my research. And yes, I'm on board with sketch. I think that the guy is fucking hilarious. Sorry for cussing.
There it is. He's a true fan, guys. He's a true fan.
it's too good. And it's actually, I was thinking about this. There's comedians that are good at this. Shane Gillis is probably the king right now. Like,
yeah.
Cringe comedy. Yep. Where it's,
yeah, where you wouldn't feel awkward if it was you.
Right. Shane Gillis does this phenomenal. First of all, he's one of the best Trump impersonators alive. Like, I think he's more Trumpy than Trump is sometimes, but he also does the joke about Biden looking like a Roomba. It's hilarious. Cringe comedy is where it's at. Sketch is on the brain. I think it's wonderful. Sketch, yeah. Keep kicking ass. What caught my attention was somehow, some way, shocker, the Chinese are spying on us. Sorry, Coop's in the background. Mom's in. Yeah, you can see it right over my corner. If anybody's watching us on YouTube, there's my 3.5-year-old child just broadcast out on the internet. Don't worry, I'm her father. I'm signing off on this. But father of the year's got her on some wireless Bose, and she's watching a 1-hour episode of something. But,
of us.
You know, you got to just I'm playing prevent defense, right? We started off the week good. And car run good today, you know, little wobbles there coming into turn 4 here, just barely got to the studio on time. But we're going to wrap up strong with a tubby after this. It's gonna be a later bedtime than usual, but that means that she's going to sleep in a little bit, which is good for me. And then we'll go from there. But I think we're going to be running a prevent defense, maybe a box and one towards the end of the week, just to really isolate and minimize mistakes. But ultimately, we're waiting until Saturday night when mom comes home and the cavalry arrives. So that's the update here from Witch City Studios. The intern is sitting over my shoulder watching something fucking Disney, but sketch. I love them. I think it's great. I think it's funny. Looking back, it's much more of like, holy shit. Like I wasn't part of that social media world where you were. I don't know what that says about us, but how are you, my man? Listen, like I said, you obviously have endured along with the throngs of fans tuning in across America right now. Thanks for joining us, team. At This Buds for You, Chief of Morale here for Divots and Pivots. And like we said just a minute ago, flying solo this week, the roommate's out of town. Really tough work gig down there at the Ritz-Carlton in Miami on South Beach. She sent me a picture of from her room, and I'm not going to go any further. I'm just upset about it. Anyway, good to see you. And if you're just tuning in, that's kind of a preview of what this week's show is going to be like. We're coming off of a couple of some historic shit here, and we'll get into all that. And then there's some sneaky good other golf going on. We'll talk about the Arnold Palmer Cup here in a minute, but what's on your brain? You texted me earlier, and I'm actually excited about this one. Not that you don't excite me every day with your morning wood. Check us out on the weekends, Morning Woods at Divots and Pivots on TikTok and Instagram. But this topic particularly is timely, and I think it's going to flow nicely with today's show. And eventually, if you are tuning in, or if you're on the podcast and you're like, just give me the picks, just who you rolling with, we're going to do things a little different this week because it is a team event. Don't worry, we will kind of splice hairs and get into the Zurich later, but you could skip to the end of the podcast if that's what you're waiting for. Because right now we're about to dive into kind of the topic du jour. which was on Andrew Grain, that leads us down some other topics related to this week in golf. So let's get Twiggy with it, Andrew. What is your opening thought?
Well, yeah, because it struck me sitting. I mean, it's been striking me for a couple of days, but specifically sitting last night, watching the Bruins game and commercials. And I was watching it on the ESPN broadcast, and ESPN and other news networks was putting up this graphic of the I think it was titled "The Gender Pay Gap," and it showed a picture of Caitlin Clark, and her first year salary as the number one pick in the WNBA is like $76,500, which I am shocked it was that low. Honestly, I thought it was more than that. I knew it wasn't anywhere near the guys, but I thought it was higher than that. And then they showed Wembanyama, who was the number one pick last year in the NBA draft to the Spurs. His first season salary was 12.1. And it struck me because I saw people reposting it and commenting on it and being like, I'm outraged. Like, this is crazy that this happens. And it got me thinking, like, okay, like, there is a problem with gender pay gaps in the workforce across this country, but not in the sports world.
Wow.
Now, yes, obviously that's 12.1 to 76,000 is a massive difference.
10.1. I'm looking at it right here. And you're right with that 76,000. Whoever got up this graphic has it at 78, which I think they're wrong. I think you and ABC News are correct.
Wow, me and ABC News, cool. But what I'm trying to say is that, like, when it comes to the major sports in this country, the NBA, the NFL, and then go to the NBA, the WNBA as well, the players are paid and all the employees of those teams are paid based off of shared revenue streams. It's all based off of a percentage off of what they make. The league makes on TV deals, ads, all that jazz, game tickets and all that. I get the point people are trying to make, and it's a valid point. Gender equality when it comes to pay needs to change in the workforce. Using the sports world as the argument feels just misguided. It feels like you're only going to run your argument in circles, if that makes sense, because it's not a great example. And so as I'm watching people get enraged, I'm just thinking, like, well, just research something else instead of this as your example, because you can make your point that you're trying to make in a very valid way. Just don't do it with this example is how I felt, because it should change. Just not based off Caitlin Clark.
I wish I knew the name of the comedian, but he has a that I just saw on TikTok, and he was using God. I think I brought up Trump, Biden, and abortion in the first 8 minutes of a golf show. Here we go. He makes an abortion kind of joke, and it's literally a joke. And he goes, I agree with the what does he say? I agree with, like, the messaging. I disagree with the marketing. And what he's talking about, he's like, the messaging is that, you know, a woman should be able to have, you know, safe access to healthcare, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He's like, I get that. I'm on board with that. He goes, when it came to marketing and they picked a slogan, he goes, we went with pro-choice. He goes, pro woman was sitting right there. And I mean, and that's kind of your point of, like, okay, I get what you're saying. You're trying to shine a light on an ongoing conversation, which is ironically not too far from what my opening thought was with Nelly Korda. And so we'll pivot there. Cause I agree with what you're saying, where you're okay. I get it. These are both revenue generators, and you're not going to close a 76,000 to 12.5 or 10.5 million. You're not going to close that overnight. That is the step, and that is, you know, highlighting it is step one. Step two is also recognizing that the WNBA is a much smaller league. You know, I think they have 12 teams, 16 teams. They're growing, they're emerging, they're going to get there. Thank God for social media eyeballs and instant access, because Caitlin Clark is going to be taken care of through her marketing deals and her and all that kind of stuff. She's getting a shoe.
And she's going to help the WNBA jump. Like, this is good for the WNBA.
Right. And so it's funny enough, LPGA. So in case you missed it, Nelly Korda, our very own Nelly Korda. I've been big on, you know, the Korda family since this show started, because of going back to when I was watching Papa play tennis. Look it up. Her dad won the Australian Open in tennis. And so she won her fifth in a row, and then she withdrew this week. She's pulling out. Yep. And I like that move because it says two things. A, I want to keep this streak alive, because as long as she doesn't start the tournament, the streak's alive,
right?
You know, consecutive starts, that kind of thing. And B, it's just, this is the next era of athlete. And when I said there's a crossover here, I meant that figuratively, and I didn't realize it was a basketball pun there with a crossover.
I like
the LPGA is maybe a step, I would say, I don't know if you want to say a step, a generation, you know, a leap ahead of where the WNBA is, but it's following a similar path where, you know, the WNBA has had some stars within basketball, like within the basketball world. I think Caitlin Clark might be the first one that kind of transcends it, mostly because she looks like your kid sister. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like there's something accessible about that where
she's also super likable. Like if you've seen her in any of her interviews, she's just very relatable.
And honestly, I do think what this is going to do is that spotlight's going to keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It's not going to focus in on her because she knows and kind of speaks about this responsibility a little bit and understands the moment. So she is going to, I think you're going to consistently see her be the kind of player. And I can't remember who does it in baseball, but there's these post game interviews where there's certain players, you can never get them. They'll always ask somebody, some other teammates running by, they'll grab them and say, actually, Gerald had 5 blocks today. You need to talk to him, you know? I could see her doing some of that kind of stuff. So where does golf come in? The LPGA Tour is finally, you know, it's getting to a point where some of these major purses are getting bigger. It's still hard to grind it out and make a living as an LPGA golfer. It's incredibly hard. You know, I talk about Nelly Korda and just like the differences in the, you know, we say in the men's game, you know, we focus on the top 20, 30 people, players at any given moment. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. The same thing with the LPGA. The difference is those hundreds and hundreds and hundreds that are not in that top 15 or 20. It's not a apples to apples, you know, comparison to what, you know, somebody who's 60th, Tom Hoagie on the PGA Tour, you know, he's making out a lot, probably better than his counterpart over in the LPGA Tour, but it's trending in that direction. And you do see kind of eyeballs going there. What's up, babe? I can't hear what you're saying. I'm talking to Andrew. I'm actually talking about women's sports so that one day you can grow up and make a lot of money and retire mommy and daddy. How's your movie?
I love that.
You good? All right. Love you.
He's going to have to make a cameo.
Koopa Troopa, Cooper Rose. But we're trending in that direction. And so I hear what the people are saying. It's so small. It's so, ironically enough, in a world that is trying to convince everybody that nothing is binary anymore, except for computer code. Even these situations, it's not just, I was the first pick. What's the men's league doing over here? We saw this in soccer where the U.S. women's team just recently, and I say now, it's like their last, are getting to a point where they can get equitable or equal salary. Now you talk about the World Cup and FIFA and that kind of money pool. That's a whole different conversation, but the argument about, wait a minute, we're USA soccer. We've got way more wins than they do. You know, at least what's coming from the home base should be much more, you know, on par. And they're there. Sport has been around for thousands of years. Women's sports is a relatively emerging. Now it's very easy for us to play catch up. You know, we have the resources and we're smart enough to do it. We know the recipe. But the you can't just put a product out there and demand it too. I think it's Bill Burr and some of the other, you know, misogynistic comedians talking about. I'm gone deep, man. Quarter hour in, we're our misogyny, abortion,
you've gone all over the place.
Trump. This has been one hell of a ride.
If you've never experienced a pivot episode with Divots and Pivots, you got one tonight. This is a pivot episode already.
100%. And Bill Burr talks about, but Bill Burr and some of the other comedians, they do rip on, and I've heard female athletes say this too, like, ladies, where are you? Like, don't just tweet from your couch. You know, I'm not,
that's the thing.
I'm not trying to declare war. I'm repeating what some comedians said. But there is a truth there of activating an audience, and which is why, you know, Koopa Troopa we watch the LPGA Tour, you know, and I watch all golf with her because you're going to be a golfer. She does it. She'll look up and go, daddy, she's wearing a skirt. Yes. Yep. She's wearing a skirt. Yes, you have a skirt too. And she'll grab her putter and she'll knock it around. So I appreciate it. When you texted me earlier, I thought you were fired up, and I can tell you're fired up about it because you just hate the ignorance that's involved with drawing.
And that's all it is. I hate when people get angry without knowing this full story or really thinking about the big picture. Cause there's just no point in being angry for no reason in this day and age. And yeah, you mentioned it. I was actually shocked because this did lead me to do a little bit of research, and I looked it up because I was curious, okay, what is the demographic of the majority of fans of the WNBA? I was shocked that it's men are the largest a larger demographic than the women are, than females of the WNBA. And I think that just speaks to, obviously, I think people still bet on the WNBA. I think the more men bet, I think more men bet on sports and play, like,
watch sports in general. Men are less risk averse in everything. Yeah. I mean, there might, you know what, there could be people betting eventually on this show, the over under on when I bring camp into the conversation, that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But yeah, what you just identified is, across the board, generally speaking, dudes dig sports more than females. I mean, that's not,
sure, but you know,
that's an observation now, that said, you can know that, and then you can make decisions based on that kind of information on how do you market? Sure. What do you do outreach? Why are, you know, can you take care of your foundational fan base without alienating them or making them feel like assholes, right, when you do say, hey, you people who have never come to a golf tournament, basketball game, you know, whatever you want to call it before, you should come down? Because I will say that too, is there's an accessibility, I think, in a beauty in women's sports. I've watched, my sister was a very highly skilled soccer player, and my other sister was a college tennis player. We used to go to the Bosch and Lomb. It used to be called the Bosch and Lomb. It was down in Amelia Island, South Carolina. And my sisters were actually ball girls in this professional tennis tournament. And when I was like 12 or 13 years old, I went down for one more spring break, like, trip. I went with my mom, and then we played golf, and, you know, it was wonderful. And I got to meet Gabriella Sabatini and Steffi Graf. But watching these women in these live tennis matches, and I've seen the dudes, I've seen Agassi and Sampras growing up, you know, live. They look like, and I've seen tennis balls explode when men hit them because of the power. And Serena Williams has even talked about the differences there. But that doesn't mean that there's not a value in both of them that can be still entertaining. Yeah, and I think even more so with golf, because golf, by and large, is 200 yards and in. That's the game. And from there, it's how can you position yourself? And you saw it with this most recent, you know, the match. It's fun. And Rose Zhang, and, you know, they're giving it. Who was the other one? It was Lexi and Rose Zhang.
It was Lexi, yeah.
I'd like to see Charlie Hull in there. I'd like to see Lillian Vu, who won a couple majors last year. And I'd like to see Divots and Pivots give a little more attention. If we've got a we're not shitting on the John Deere anymore. Who's our punching bag? No. Barracuda. So if we've got a Barracuda
What did we just have as the secondary tournament this past week? It was a Caribbean one, or a tropical one, wasn't it? Corrales this past week?
Billy Horschel won.
I know it was Billy Ho, but was it?
It was Corrales Punta, the Corrales Punta Cana, Championship.
Yeah. Just pick that one. Why not?
All right, Billy Horschel. So actually, by the way, you're it's a perfect example, because this was the Chevron Championship week, and Nelly did get her fifth consecutive start, tying Annika Sorenstam in the same way she did, tying Nancy Lopez, who did it back in 1978. And back in 78, when Nancy Lopez did it, she was on like the cover of Sports Illustrated, like New York Times, USA, these outlets that were not paying attention to women's sports, really, let alone women's golf. Unless it was an Olympic year and you were a cute little bobheaded, you know, gymnast, you weren't getting the attention of the national press when it comes to women's sports. And so doing something like this, and you see how far apart, you know, 78, and then Annika did it back in 2008. And now there's this kind of resurgence of, and a focus of, almost a jump start. I hope Nelly keeps it going. I hope she breaks the record. Yeah. And I do think, and I hope it kind of has that Caitlin Clark effect, where it gets some people paying attention more so than who they normally wouldn't have. And I bet agree. If you look at the schedule, we'd notice that some of these majors do fall on some of the more off weeks. Now, the reason we can't shit on, so we're gonna go with the Punta Cana.
Punta Cana Corrales, yeah.
Why not? All right, Corrales. We'll go with the Corrales, because I feel really fucking stupid saying Punta Cana as a gringo. Can't crap on the Butterfield Bermuda Championship, because they just extended a sponsor's exemption to our boy Miles Russell.
I know, what a crazy story. I was following this a lot this weekend, because I saw the first, like, the on Thursday, I saw the post or the article, whatever, the headline of, you know, 15-year-old kid
shoots 66
in a tournament for the first time. And I was like, oh, that's pretty damn cool. Okay. But then, of course, because I'm a cynical golfer, I said, okay, yeah, he'll go out and shoot 85 tomorrow and all will be right in the world again. And no. I forget what his actual score. I want to say did he shoot under 70 in both rounds? The first round? Actually, I know he made the cut though. That's the biggest deal there, is that he made the cut at this event. And absolutely kind of it's a shame. If this wasn't a weekend where Nelly Korda won again and Scottie Scheffler won again, this would have been such a bigger story. Because this is something the golf fans are gonna geek out about.
I think it's appropriately, let me pull this damn leaderboard. What was this? The Lucom, what the fuck? Corn Fairy. Sorry for cussing. Corn Fairy leaderboard. That's not, the Veritex Bank. Where were we last week? The Lucom. I remember it was Lucom because this was down on the Florida coast somewhere. But Miles Russell, 15 years old. He is from Jacksonville, Florida. The thing is, where the fuck is this? He's the reigning AJG. Yeah, find his. Where's the intern? Somebody get the intern.
She's behind you watching, I don't know, Peppa Pig or whatever she's watching.
what is she? Is Spidey and His Amazing Friends?
Oh, that's a good one.
Is it the Lecom Suncoast Classic? There we go.
Yeah, I just found it the same time. Yep.
The Lecom Suncoast Classic. And where did our boy finish? Because he finished in the top 20 somewhere.
So it was definitely top 25, I thought, because I thought that was part of this. Top 25 finish on the PGA Tour. Why are Corn Ferry Tour.
I can't find him on. Are they not showing him because he's an amateur? Like,
I mean, that doesn't make sense. It's tournament. They're going to show the full tournament leaderboard, I would think.
You would think.
He carded 170 in Saturday. So he carded 170 in Saturday's round, which he had led up to. Yeah, so. I don't know. It's actually
Saturday. Finish, though, so. It was top 25?
Yeah.
Where did he finish?
He was the high school freshman. Russell became the youngest player on record since 1983 to notch a top 25 finish.
66 in the final round.
Wild.
Third round, though, he came out. So, yes, thank you for that. And if you're still with us on this show, a blessing on your home while we got caught up on that. Again, roommates out of town, didn't have much time to prep. The interns are going to get fired. You're going to get fired. But Miles Russell, 15-year-old kid, can't shit on the Butterfield Bermuda Championship because I think they took this opportunity and they said, hey, this kid is the reigning AJGA Rolex Player of the Year, which he got last fall and broke Tiger Woods' record. Tiger was the youngest winner of that award until Miles Russell came along. And I think this kid already has NIL deals with TaylorMade and Nike
most likely.
Yeah. Because he's also he's the Player of the Year. And that's why the Butterfield said, hey, we're going to start giving a sponsor's exemption to the AJGA Rolex Player of the Year every year moving forward, starting with Miles Russell. So, you know, shout out to them for growing the game that way. But he also won the Junior PGA last year. And I don't think it was played at the same place as the regular PGA. But then the Junior Players, he won that as well. That was at Sawgrass. And he shot like a closing round 66 on the stadium course. Like, so this kid is not
ridiculous.
It's stupid. It's silly. Like, I mean, he's 15 years old and his stock, you know, his stock three wood is 270 or something like that. Like,
it's outrageous.
But here's what's really impressive about him. So obviously when you're 15 and you get this invite, your first thing is, I just want to make the cut, right? Like that's the next goal. And I'm actually rereading this like series of essays on mental toughness, trying to prep myself for the upcoming golf season. So
yeah,
I'm revisiting these essays. And it talks about, you know, goal setting and like little goals that build to the big goals, et cetera, obviously. And so for him, naturally, he didn't think past making the cut. So when you make the cut, it's like, all right, I did that. Now you're playing with house money. And I love that he goes immediately, though I thought about it, if I'm top 25, I get to play again next week. And so he comes out the gate in the third round, double bogey, bogey, bogey. And right then and there, you think, all right, the ride's over.
Yep. There it is. Yep.
It still would have been mentioned. It would have been shouted out. Mm-hmm. But the fact that then he bounces back and goes birdie eagle at the turn and then snags a couple more birdies to shoot one under on the day. And then he wraps it up with what he shoot in the fourth round, 66. Then we say, yeah. And then a 566.
66. Yeah.
to climb the leaderboard and get it. At one point, he was like T3 because it was early enough in the day that the leaders weren't out yet. And he was one of those guys that made a huge jump. And it's just a really fun story. And I think that it's also, it's a testament to the PGA Tour. This right here is a perfect example of when why Liv is probably on the chopping block. I'm not going to lie. I keep waffling and going back and forth because I know the world is riveted by my predictions on Liv's future. But right, you like that?
They talk about you in the UN every day.
I mean it moves the betting lines in Moroccan casinos on what's going to happen at Liv Adelaide down under. Truth gun to your head, when is Liv Adelaide? Adelaide is their Australia. I don't even know if I'm saying that right. I've got some followers. I got some followers down under. I'll ask them.
I think you are saying it right. But honestly, I have no clue.
It is this weekend. Hey, look at that. We stumbled upon some live news. Let's see if there's any
free. I mean, I will say they did plan their schedule out in a way that makes sense because it's obviously in a what we would consider a somewhat down week. Because it's like a different week for the PGA. It's coming off of a major and then a signature event. So people they're banking on people wanting to watch golf right now because they're on that high of two nice big tournaments. And then being left with on the PGA side, the Zurich Classic, which we like the Zurich Classic because it's funny enough, the Zurich Classic kind of offers a little bit of what Liv offers.
First of all, blasphemy. Absolute blasphemy, which you just said.
I'm just talking about the music. That's all I'm talking about.
I will that is still blasphemy, and I will tell you why later. But
tell me why later.
Liv Adelaide, so fan favorite Hudson Swafford's in the field as a wild card. Mm-hmm. Anthony Kim's in the field as a wild card. Brooks Koepka's got some nice. Brooks Koepka has got the same hair that I did in high school, like with this like it's not a mullet, but you have long hair everywhere that you pull back, so you have this like big swoop coming up. I have less than no hair at this point on top of my head. It's all on my face, and that even ain't saying much. Who else is in this field? It's just like I'm not getting up at 2 a.m. to watch third round action live online to see Lucas Herbert and Sam Horsfield go head-to-head.
You know? And did when – what's his name there? Dean something when he – Breckenridge or whatever
Dean the hell Burmester. His
name was. Burmester, that's what it was. When he won just before the Masters on Liv – And everyone's like that came off as a hit to Liv for me. Like with
not
what
really.
They He's... with what they brought, like I know, and that's the thing. He's actually when you really look at his career, the guy's had a pretty nice career, pretty successful career, playing golf around the world on different tours and winning tournaments and finishing well. But Liv is looking for the name pops. And most people don't know who Dean Burmester is. And for him to go out there and win a week or two, I forget exactly how long it was before the Masters. Like, I don't think that's what Liv was looking for.
I mean, it was the week before the Masters.
It was the week before.
Okay, yeah. And it was the Doral event because he also went back to back on the DP World Tour last fall. I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of shocked that the South African Open Championship. That was one of them. And then the Joburg Open, he went back to back. I'm shocked he didn't get a special invite after cleaning up Liv Doral, but that's because it's not the more we do this, the more we see the Miles Russells, the Ludwig Aubert's, the, you know, Christo Lambrecht's, the depth and the amount of times that people like Fred Ridley at Augusta National gets up there and talks about the lack of, you know, access to these tournaments and that they have no relegation and there's 60 guys as opposed to the thousands when you add up the Sunshine Tour and the PGA Tour. There are thousands of these guys out there. And that's what they're saying. Like these guys, they bought into a certain, and if Liv goes to 72 holes, like they're talking about, then it's almost like, what are you even doing then? Now you literally shotgun start, kiss my ass. Like who cares about a shot?
Yeah.
She can't hear me. Those headphones are loud. I've said worse shit already.
They're not too loud.
But the shotgun start is the only thing that is unique to Liv because
They wear shorts.
The DP World Tour wears shorts now. I'll say
they really?
Yeah.
Good for them. Good for them. Well, I like the idea of letting them wear shorts. That's fine with me.
Yeah, I couldn't care less about the shorts pants thing. The DP World Tour, because they're in like India where it's 197 degrees at night.
Yeah.
They have to. It's not fair. But when we get back from hearing from Underdog, I will tell you why I'm incredibly upset with your Zurich, Live, any kind of comparison.
Fantasy Sports Corp and Underdog Fantasy have teamed up to start your fantasy season off in the win column with Best Ball. What is Best Ball? It's quite simply the easiest way to win. No team management, no trades, no waivers. It's their biggest contest ever and it has only gotten bigger. You simply have to sit and win. You don't even have to set your lineup. Always get your best score every week. Just enter a contest, draft your team, and Underdog will do the rest. What could make this even better? How about free money? Up to $100 using our exclusive promo code. Go online now and use the promo code DIVPIV to double your deposit up to $100. You tell them Gingerbread sent you. Good girl.
Real fast, that is a quick reminder that football season is among us. No, not the actual season, of course, but fantasy season is about to get really picking up in preparation because of the draft this week. And also the reason why I am patiently driving myself insane, checking my email, because on Friday, Scott Fishbowl invites started going out. And I have yet to receive mine. It's okay. I'm not freaking out. I'm good. I'm chilling, waiting. If you're watching, Scott, you know my email. I'm waiting. But Scott, look, it is what it is. There's like 3,200, I think 3,500 people in it. So I'd be honored to be in it again, but fantasy football's coming back. Get on Underdog, start drafting some best ball lineups for the upcoming season. As the draft happens this week, guys are going to fall in place. Have some fun with it. Underdog's the place to do that. Why did I piss you off with the comment about walk-up music? Similar. All I was trying to draw a comparison to was that there's music involved. That's all.
Yeah, that Liv ripped off from Zurich.
Sure.
Because Zurich has been doing so. No, I got really upset the other day when I brought up Zurich in one of my morning reels. And somebody kind of commented, I get really upset, not genuinely upset. I am a grown ass man at times. But they were like, oh, look at that. PGA Tour taking a page out of the Liv book and doing some team calls.
Oh, do they really? Oh God.
Yeah.
Jeez. No, other way around.
Not even. The Liv is doing something on its own, but in 2017, sure, well, yeah. In 2017, that's when Zurich went to a team competition team format. In 2017, there wasn't Liv Golf, right? So
yeah.
This goes back to your Caitlin Clark thing at the beginning when people try to
you're gonna get rage.
Points of data, and they just ignorantly try to draw a line. Now they could have been trolling me. I've been trolled before, and I've taken the bait in the wrong way. Although at times I enjoy trolling myself. But the Zurich Classic of New Orleans, it's been around since 1938. A couple of things that I want to run you through here before we go full Zurich, because once you go full Zurich, you don't go back. Back to my AJPA, the Miles Russell conversation, this left-handed kid. Folks might not, I played in exactly, I think, one AJGA event when I was a child. I paid the dues. I joined it. I went out there. And that was kind of my first welcome to the NBA, you know, moment of like, holy shit. Like, I was good. I was good enough to be, you know, play my high school team and, you know, all this kind of stuff. I was scratch, quote unquote. I think I was even like a plus 0.1, 1.2 at some point when I was in high school. But I mean, that was also, you know, at home on comfortable courses. Under this kind of competition, it's a totally different ballgame. So it's kind of cool that the AJGA is getting this official partnership sponsorship, because Rolex is really the crossover there. They're the sponsor of the Player of the Year Award for the AJGA, and obviously they've been in bed with pro golf since Arnold Palmer. And so if you go back and you look at the list of these winners, the AJGA is the breeding ground for professional golf. Going back to 1986, I'm not going to read you all of them, but listen to these names that come through this kind of circuit. So we got Phil Mickelson, David Duval, Tiger Woods, Charles Howell. You might not be Hunter Mahan, Casey Charles Whitten.
Howell. I know Hunter Mahan. Jesus. I
remember Brian Harman, Peter Uline, Jordan Spieth, Matthew Naismith, Scotty Scheffler, mm-hmm. Sam Burns, Akshay Bhatia, Nick Dunlap. So you see,
every single one of those guys have had some sort of career.
Some sort of career. Those guys
in the biggest stages. What I mean, like they've made it to the big time and have shined for at least a weekend.
Yeah, I didn't mention all of them, although I think all of these people have gone on to play professional golf. So, cool thing for Miles Russell. Shout out to that kid. Keep kicking ass. Have fun with it. And he seems to have that demeanor. They're getting so much better at it at a younger age, and I think that's just because, kind of adults are becoming sickos with how soon we're pushing sports on our kids. But you're going to learn to golf. You're going to learn to golf soon.
Well, I think a lot of people are pushing their kids away from more physical sports too. So golf falls right in line with the complete opposite of a physically dangerous sport in some people's eyes.
So golfers are athletes. You watch your mouth. So the Zurich Classic.
I didn't say athlete. I said physical. They're not running around. Knocking each other's heads off on the greens. No, I've actually had that conversation with Anna recently about like I would love for you to come out and like walk 18 holes and swing your club and move your body that way like 100 times and see how your body feels. Cause the first time you do that, carrying your bag 18 holes and you take, let's be honest, probably around 100 swings, like you feel it the next day and you realize, oh shit, these guys who do this every single week, and not even every single week, and they do it every day of the week, like they're athletes. I don't want to hear it. They just don't sprint. They don't run 4.4s. They don't, wear pads and knock each other's heads off. But they're athletes.
They're athletic. I don't know if you're an athlete to play. No, I'm just kidding. by the way, it was Tiger. Tiger was the whole one that shifted it, because when I was growing up and when you were growing up and when Anna was growing up, it was a lot more of the pot bellies and the plaid pants and,
John Daly.
ripping heaters and going to the bar afterwards before sometimes. There's a great story of Miguel Angel Jimenez, which if you don't know who that is, look him up. He's basically the guy from the Dos Equis commercial.
I'd love to have a drink. I was just going to say, I'd love to have a drink with him.
There's a great story. Fun fact, he was runner up to Tiger when Tiger won the 2000 US Open by like a million shots. Somebody can fact check him on that.
I believe you're right.
Tom Kite was runner-up at the Masters in 97, but it was Miguel Angel Jimenez was the runner-up in that 2000 U.S. Open. We can fact-check that. But there's a great story of him at the Masters, and he's in the dining room, the players' dining room, the dining room at the Masters.
Yeah.
And somebody comes in there, and there's Miguel with a cigar, a glass of red wine, a steak, and it's like, middle of the afternoon, and the guy just goes, how'd you play? And he's like, I'm about to head out. He's like, and there he is, like ripping a stogie before a competitive, practice round. But that's the kind of guy he is. All right, back to the Zurich. So it is the Zurich Classic of New Orleans since 2005, or New Orleans, or Nolens, depending, and 50 other. It's kind of one of those Louisville things.
Louisville.
But we all know that it's Boston. Goes back. It was the HP Classic, the Compact Classic, the Freeport McDermott Classic, the Freeport Freeport McMoRan Classic, the Freeport McMoRan Golf Classic, or Moran.
You can see why they changed the name, people.
The USF&G Classic, the USF&G New Orleans Open, the Greater New Orleans Open, the first NBC New Orleans Open, the Greater New Orleans Invitational, the Greater New Orleans Open Invitational, New Orleans Open, and it started out in 1938 as the Crescent City Open. I still don't like the nickname Crescent City, but I'm also not from New Orleans. The only real fun thing about this is, like we said, it's team golf. They're partnered. These guys get together and they essentially find their own partners. There's a great story where Rory's out there, going to be out there this week, Rory McIlroy. And this is one of those tournaments where a lot of the top tier names don't play it because it's not going to say gimmicky, but it's not a signature event. It's not like on their list. Yeah. It is much more of a fun event, but it's also an opportunity. If you watch Full Swing, this is where Alex Fitzpatrick kind of got his chance to spread his wings a little bit. And he's going to be playing again with his big brother, Matt Fitzpatrick.
Yep.
Rory's going to be playing with Shane Lowry. Apparently they were at lunch after the Ryder Cup and they got hammered and were like, hey, you want to play this together?
It sounds like Cutter's invitation to play Augusta.
It does, but I have more confidence in Shane and Rory getting it done than Cutter getting on Augusta. I think Bob Estes was having a little fun with Cutter.
I think so.
So when you look at the field, are there any? Have you looked at the field? Let's start there.
So I'm looking at the field now because I do want to, at least for people who do want to know some fantasy stuff, I want to at least give them the rundown of how the rules are different when playing on a place like DraftKings this weekend. I'll have to, after this, look up what the underdog, if the underdog changes their rules at all for this weekend. But because the Zurich Classic is a team event, it's a partner event, both guys on a team are going to be priced the same. You can only pick one guy from a team, and both guys score the same amount of fantasy points. So the highest scoring out of the two of them is going to be the one that counts, basically. So it really doesn't matter which one you pick. And pricing is different because, you know, Shane Lowry this week is, because he's paired with Rory McIlroy, is priced at 10,700. Like, so it's kind of a
popular player right now anyway.
It is, but it's a funky kind of week when it comes to playing fantasy golf, at least on DraftKings. Let me look up what the underdog rules are, but it's typically been a week that I've honestly stayed kind of away from playing too heavily because it's just a little goofy.
Yeah, I don't think I'm actually going to get any active lineups going out there. I'll obviously make some picks in my other league, which is always fun. I'm starting to creep back up. I'm almost back up in the top 16 in the season long standings. I really needed kind of Wyndham Clark to pull something off this last weekend, or, you know, obviously a Masters win.
He was up and down. He was having a great final round, and then he kind of dropped it there. The two of us had pretty much identical emergency nines last week. I think the only two people we had different was you had Brian Harman, I think, and I had Matthew Pavon. I believe that's where the difference was. I don't remember that off the top of my head, but the guys we did pick, now I know, smaller field, I get it. But we crushed it. Unfortunately, your Brian Harman over my Pavon was just slightly better, so you added a little bit to your lead, unfortunately, but
it's a small lead. We still have a lot of golf left, but the only reason I get interested in this week, and if you are going to kind of bet, then I mean, I would say just like, don't overcomplicate things. Like you said, especially if you're on DK, you're going to get them both anyway. So just go with the horses that you want to, and don't try to think like, oh, but they're partner, because I'm pretty sure this is best ball straight up. I don't think they do alternate shot anymore, but I could be wrong. I've been wrong before, but I don't pay much attention to the Zurich other than the walk-up music. If you make the weekend, you get walk-up music on the first tee. I personally think that you should have walk-up music on the first tee anyway at all these tournaments, except for maybe, you know, like the Masters isn't going to do it, or even the US Open.
No.
But the PGA Tour, why not? Give them walk-up
any of the actual PGA events that aren't run by the USGA or...
Yeah, if it's a PGA group. Tour event, I think that would add a little bit of personality. You can get a little bit of flair in there. But we got three brother pairs going at it this week, too. Like we said, Matty Fitzpatrick and his brother Alex are going to be paired up. The brothers Højgaard, Nikolai made a run there at Augusta, and I was kind of foolish. I was foolishly hanging my hat on him all weekend. And then the Cootie brothers, Parker and Pearson Cootie, grandkids of Charles Cootie, who won the Masters as well. And then you got pairs like this. Truth gun to your head, could you pick out Roger Sloan and Josh Teeter in a lineup?
No.
Like, nope. No, not at all.
Absolutely not.
Let's see. Bronson Berggren and Johnny Vegas. Oh,
so Bronson Berggren, I've actually picked in the last year. I remember the name from last year. No. I remember trying to say it. He was one of my picks at one point last year. Yes, I do remember him at a tournament. He's a
real golfer. I can't believe it. Sangmoon Bai and
I know Sangmoon Bai.
Let's see here. Oh, Lipsky and Ride. This is the tournament that I started falling in love with Tommy Two Gloves and David Lipsky. So I might give them a look just for nostalgia. I like this Steve Stricker, Matt Kuchar pairing. That sounds to me like they're both Stricker. Stricker's been killing it on the Champions Tour, and Kuch always seems to float up right randomly at these tournaments. And I could see them.
Kuchar's not been playing very good as of recently over the last year or so, though. Hello, Cooper.
Hi. Yes. This is one tired baby.
she looks at. I did look it up for you, but so they are, it is still alternating between four ball and alternate shot between the rounds. So rounds one and three will be four ball, rounds two and four will be alternate shot, or as they call it, foursome. You know, it's called different things, but yes, alternate shot.
I so, like yeah, that you said that foursome and four ball, because when you get confused by it, you just literally ask yourself how many golf balls are in play. If there are four balls right. in play, it's best ball. Otherwise right. it's called a foursome because there's four golfers. Get your mind out of the gutter. I think I might show some love to Andrew Putnam and Joe Highsmith just because I like the name Joe Highsmith, but this is the kind of week it is for me. I can't take it overly seriously. We're coming off such a solid run. And I do want to get back to that. All right. Is there anything truth gun to your head? This is the second truth gun to your head. I apologize. I bring up politics and then I get violent at the tail end.
Might as well be dead tonight.
Wishing made it so. Jokes, jokes. I'm being kind of dark. I think honestly, if I said Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele, that team, the Rory and Shane Lowry team, or the brothers Fitzpatrick. I give you those three or the field. Who are you taking for a winner?
For what? So honestly, I'm taking the field because I think this is just one of those tournaments where even though those names are so big and so classy and like just good, it's just one of those tournaments where another pairing that you don't expect just tends to take it a little more seriously. And gets in a rhythm. So I'll take the field.
All right. I would actually, we'll take a bet straight up. I'll take those three pairs and you can have the field. We'll figure out the details and we'll tweet it out.
That'll be this week's version of Emergency Nine because
I like it. So I've got the brothers Fitzpatrick. I got the Irishman and who was my last one? Oh, Schauffele.
The Olympians. We'll just call them. We'll call them Team USA. Can't lay in.
Yeah, Team USA, Northern Ireland, and then I think the Fitzpatrick are English. So that's
English.
Me.
Yeah,
there we go. That's my. And you're rolling with. All right, back to Scotty. I'm rolling with
everyone else. Yeah, because we have to talk about Scotty Scheffler because we haven't yet. Somehow, 46 minutes in, we've talked about everything else. You've talked about everything else for sure.
That's for damn sure.
But Scott,
I had a Caitlin Clark moment similar to yours when I saw Scotty wearing his heritage plaid jacket and somebody said, is this turning into a competition between you and Nelly? And it's Scotty Scheffler. So he was so nice about it. He's like, man, what she's doing. So impressed. They're just not the same either. It's just, you can't also,
but I love that you say that
the differences between their runs, they're equally, I would say, fascinating. I'd say Nelly's is more historic. We've seen guys, you know, we haven't seen many guys go on like a 4 out of 5 type of run, what Scotty's doing. But you talk about, you know, just the fact that he has that one T2 in there that you know, is the differentiator, if you're going to ask me, just because, again, consistency is key.
Sure.
But stop doing that and comparing the two of them. They're two separate entities. That's why it's like Nelly, I want to talk about on the front end because I thought that's where it deserved to be talked about. Scotty for me is almost getting into, and I don't want to start using the Tiger comparison because data, there's a lot of data out there to suggest shut your mouth. It's not even close to that yet.
But people are doing that already. And it's once again, slowly roll.
But I'm just holding on and saying, like, how long is this going to last? Because we are seeing kind of another. Rory did it when he rattled off, you know, 3 or 4 majors in like a 2-year run, and he won a bunch of tournaments. Jordan Spieth came out gangbusters, you know.
Hell, years ago, we saw Henrik Stenson do it years ago. Henrik Stenson went on like a historic run. What was that, like 2016 or something like that? Like,
not this.
It's not the same. But like, what I'm just saying, we see guys get hot. And going, yes, this is a different level of getting
that's
hot.
That's fair.
But it happens. It does happen. This is a slight level above. I'll give it that. But that's why I agree. I'm not ready to be comparing him to Tiger. Like, let's chill out here.
No, but what I do think is hilarious is how much, probably myself included, all of us, hyped up at the baby watch with Scotty at Augusta and now come to find out, like, Meredith drove him to the bar when he got back Sunday night.
Right.
These people, Scotty and Meredith, but that's who they are. The golf world. They are. Yeah. Kind of, okay. Tiger was Tiger and he was so inaccessible. You know, he was not relatable.
Jack Nicklaus, inaccessible even to his peers on tour.
Right. Jack Nicklaus was famously family first kind of mentality, and he was still able to win that many tournaments and have that many runner-up finishes. But family was super important to him. And I'm not saying that family wasn't important to Tiger, but Tiger himself has even admitted he had to kind of do this for as long as he did to get it done the way he did. And so to have somebody like Scotty come around, and if he were to continue playing like this, I mean, obviously you got to rack up. If you want to be put in the company of Jack, you got to get to double digits in those. That's kind of the line of demarcation. Brooks has said it. Also, his kind of career, his goal is like, I want double digit majors. He's like, and I think it's doable. I've got five. And it's kind of mind blowing when you think about that. And so also that goes to show why the Live Tour and why they piss and moan, and Taylor Gooch talks about asterisks, because all these guys want are those majors. That's what's important in golf. The money, once you have the money, it's not as important. You know, you ask some of these grinders out there, and sure, they'd love to play in a major and win a major, but they really just want financial security for their family, which is why they're doing this for a living. And, you know, that competitive drive is what helps them get there. But to see Rory McIlroy come back to the PGA Tour policy board as a player director after throwing in the towel last fall, after seeing everything that was captured on camera from Full Swing, this was another kind of interesting back and forth with, if you don't follow Teed Up Amateur, I think that's just at Teed Up Amateur. He's a great follow, fun guy across the pond. He was commenting how he's not too thrilled with Rory's return, because as a fan of Rory's, this guy's concerned that we're going to get, you know, all that kind of distracted, this, that, and the other. And I disagree a little bit, because I think that Rory is, these guys don't make the same mistakes twice. So
yeah, he's learned a lot over the last year.
And I'm interested because he knows the key players. He was in the battle. And then when the June 6th kind of armistice was announced last year, I mean, that's essentially what it was. It was kind of like
an armistice.
He was sitting there in the battlefield with his machine gun blaring, going, wait, what? Like, nobody told me about this. And he felt betrayed. Time heals all wounds. And the scuttlebutt is that Yasser really likes him, likes Rory. And Rory said he likes Yasser. I mean, everybody said who's met with this guy said, like, they're impressed by him. They like him. He wants what's best, et cetera. And so Rory, I think, has had enough time to reflect and realize that now he is in a position he wasn't before. And it's almost like, well, you know what? You're right. You didn't decide to board this ship, but now that we're out at sea, you're in a position to make some changes and really affect the direction of all this if you want to. And that's what he wants. That's what he wanted at the beginning. He was just pissed off that he wasn't in the inner circle. And now even this it's not even an inner circle anymore, but it's like, all right, if you want to come back to the table, because it's also going to come with a board seat for the PGA Tour Enterprises. And he's going to get a fat slice of that equity that they're handing out anyway. So it also might have been one of those things. It's going to look stupid for us to give him this slice, not have him on the board, but then he used to be over here. I find it interesting. I really do want to know eventually if Webb Simpson was, did they draw straws to find out who's going to give up their seat for Rory? Did he offer it up? Did Rory, like, how did that go down? Because
someday we'll find out.
Was it like, all right, let's look around the room. Patrick, Cantlay, no. Spieth, no. Tiger, no. So we got Peter Malnati or Webb Simpson. Webb, your
putter still sucks, so peace out.
I don't know how that works. Or Webb could have just been like, yeah, man, I don't, like, it could have just genuinely been like, I don't care. Like,
I mean, let's be honest. Webb's got to know, out of all those guys, he's currently in current affairs and events the least relevant.
Fake news. He's way more relevant than Peter Malnati. No disrespect to the bucket hat. And I know that the PBJ is a cool, good story.
Peter Malnati, I would say he's been a better story recently.
He's not more relevant in the game writ large. Webb Simpson has won a Players Championship. He has won a U.S. Open. He's worn the red, white, and blue in the Ryder Cup. Yeah. Like, come on, stop. Stop.
Yeah, time ago.
Keep an eye on Tom Hoagie and Mav McNealy. That was another pairing. I like that, because when you were saying there's certain kind of pairings out there, Maverick McNealy and Tom Hoagie. Hoagie's won. I don't think McNealy is broken through yet, but they're at that tier of it's just golf. Why not us? You know, a couple of dipshits, kind of like you and me. We're going to take on Zurich next year. We got to take on the boys from Basic Bogeys before we do that. So
we do have to do that.
What else? So Scotty's historic. We'll see him again. Let's take a quick peek ahead. What's going on in the PGA Tour the next few weeks? Because we got the PGA Championship at Valhalla in a couple of weeks, but between now and then, we got Zurich, and then I think they go out to Colonial. The CJ Cup, Byron Nelson, which is at Colonial.
I'm just quickly looking up McNealy's best finish. Yeah, no wins. He is top 100 in the official world golf rankings, though, 99th in the world.
We buried the lead.
We buried the lead. Which lead?
Myrtle Beach. The Monday qualifier.
I can't wait. It's coming up.
No,
it's
they in announced
like two
it.
Weeks. Three. Would they announce who won?
Several popular. Okay, this is a 2-minute read.
No. Hold on.
Five hours ago. Several popular YouTubers had a chance to earn a spot. This is from PGAtour.com. Veteran Korn Ferry Tour pro Matt Atkins won the qualifier and will compete on tour next month. I noticed this.
I miss it?
I don't know, because somebody else will now, because now all the social media is rolling out. I saw somebody else posting their video and it's like, hey, we can finally post our shit from Myrtle Beach.
I'm still going to watch all the videos though, because I do want to see how Fat Perez did. I want to see how Grant Horvat did. Like, I want to see how some of these guys stood up to each other, to their peers.
All right. Appears frequently. I want to see where Atkins known affectionately as Crashkins.
Is he really? That's a great
Atkins
nickname,
drained Crash. A 15-foot. There was a playoff between one of the Bryan brothers and Atkins.
Oh, one of the Bryan brothers was in there too.
Yeah, okay. Fat did not shoot 67 or whatever the fuck that rumor that was going out there.
Oh, I didn't even hear that rumor. But what did you shoot? Do you have the leaderboard there?
No, I'm trying to find it.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to do more research on that tomorrow when I'm more up for it. Cause I thought I had another week until that came out, so I'm a little annoyed with myself that I missed that, because we've been talking about it for like a month and I missed it.
That's
a bummer.
I'm so upset.
That's a bummer, but I got one last question. For you to end the show here on a question note for you. All right, because I was at a bar watching the Bruins game last night, and I looked up, and you know how bars put, you know, bottles of their beers or cans of their drinks up on the wall so you know what they have. Well, and I'm looking through them, they got a nice section over here, and then they got another section that's clearly non-alcoholic beverages, your Bud Zero, your Corona, whatever.
Sure.
And then I look, and something catches my eye. It's a black can that says White Claw. And I was like, what? And I thought about it. I was like, a non-alcoholic seltzer is just a seltzer water, right? At that point, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. So why? Like, I get it. Non-alcoholic beers, I get it. I know I have people in my family, people in my life who are sober, and they'll drink the non-alcoholic beers. They like the taste of beer. Mm-hmm. I get it. Totally get it. But a seltzer, why? I don't get why I would never pay like $4 or $5 for a non-alcoholic White Claw when I can probably just ask the bartender for a glass of soda water for a buck.
Toss a line.
It just seems so silly to me.
When you said,
am I crazy?
I got tickled that you got so pissed off by it, because that's like a Larry.
Well, I wasn't
David
mad.
Sign.
I was confused.
That is true. Non-alcohol. Well, I mean, then again, we're also a civilization that bottled water. I mean, that's the whole thing from Spaceballs where they talk about canned air. Like, because it was supposed to be like, really, people are paying for this shit? No, I agree. Like $7 for a non-alcoholic White Claw, or you can pay $1.50 for like a Polar from the fridge. You know what I mean? Yeah. Or a Schweppes or Schweppes, whatever the hell. There was something.
Like, because at that point, all you're doing is technically paying for the White Claw signature flavor. Their black cherry or whatever. But hell, I can go to Market Basket and probably get a black cherry seltzer water, a 12 pack for like $8. It'd be perfectly fine.
This fucking New England conversation I've had in a couple weeks. Land the plane.
Land the plane is right. I hope you enjoyed our pivot episode tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us. If you're a hardcore bettor, this wasn't your show tonight, and we apologize. We'll be back next week. But we love all y'all who appreciate and hang out with us. And yeah, stick around for the morning woods on the weekends, because I embarrassed myself with a TikTok dance this weekend, and apparently none of you liked it, so I won't be doing that again. We will see you later.
People shit on your dance?
No, they didn't shit on it. They just simply didn't watch it.
So. Oh, it takes time. That was gold. That go right now. If you didn't watch it, go follow. That was gold, my man. So, don't ever stop.
If you couldn't tell, I did that dance without the music actually playing. So I was just like, had it in my head and was doing it. I was a little offbeat, but whatever. Either way, watch the Morning Woods on the weekends. I'm Andrew LeDuc at Real Mr. Mal. This is Bud Copeland at This Bud's for You. The intern's chilling in the background, about to go to sleep. And we will catch you next week, every Tuesday night here on That Sports Podcast Network at 8 o'clock. Love you guys. And as always, stay classy.